Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gamers of all ages, welcome once again to episode 3 of the Jesse and James Team Rocket podcast. I'm Jesse.
I'm James, and I'm confused, but okay, welcome to episode 3, bruh.
Yeah, and that episode 2 was a real blast, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was funny. Some tears were shed. Somebody got killed. It was amazing. Everything you need in a sequel. Now, I was hoping it would, like, Dark Knight and make this last one, like, worse.
And speaking of sequels that involve that are bigger, badder, bloodier, and more violent, we are going to talk about Hotline Miami 2 Wrong Number today on the podcast. Also, James is going to cover retro games, and I'm going to do a little bit of a discussion about the oncoming MMO release of Final Fantasy XIV's expansion pack, Heavensward. And before we close it out, we are also going to talk about some of the stuff that's oncoming at the 2005 Evolution Fighting Game Championships in Las Vegas.
That's going to be crazy. Insanely crazy.
Why? Because it's Evo or because it's Vegas on the Strip? Where they
Vegas
give out,
on the Strip.
Where they give out cards with escorts.
And condoms on the back. No, it's going to be crazy just because of the tournament, how it's turning out, and like the top two games in the tournament, or at least the Evo, is one of them just blows my mind. It's even like the second most played game, or going to be the second most played game. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Before we get into that, though, we're going to start off. Actually, James, I know you've been looking forward to discussing retro gaming a bit.
Yeah. It's my favorite type of gaming now. It's a lot of people's favorite, which is really weird, but also really awesome at the same time. Basically, we're going to get into something that I wish I would have worded correctly when I wrote it down, or like, you know, in episode 2, but this one I'm really going to say is it's amazing. There's a lot of different avenues for retro gaming. Like, there's the modern retro game, which are new games that are designed to look retro, like what Jesse was talking about, we'll talk about later. There's also, I believe, Mighty No. 9, Shovel Knight, Shantae's, I want to say it's Bizarre Adventure, and there's a couple others. So, like, there's a lot of ways to get into it, including emulation of old games, but doing it the legal way, which is my favorite part.
I was going to say, when you're bringing up stuff like Shovel Knight, we're talking about, like, modern interpretations of the old-style games that we grew up on during the Nintendo era.
Yeah, just like Hotline. Also, it looks a lot like Metal Gear Solid after I had a chance to look at it more. Like, you know what I mean? Like, with a top-down, three-fourths isometric, and like, even...
Oh, there's not... No, it's just straight top-down. There's nothing isometric about that game.
Really? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but it really does look a lot like stuff like that. And it's gaining a lot of popularity to the point that where a lot of games are going backwards and making their new entries like their old games, or old new games, or making themselves look like old games, because that's what a lot of gamers are into. Because, like, if you think about it, the first big wave of gamers would be our age, from like the late 80s to early 90s, at least with console games anyway.
I was gonna say, we would qualify as that first big console gaming era. Like, we were the next one. We were the first big era after the video game crash that leveled like Atari and Intellivision, ColecoVision.
If only they leveled television. But yeah, there's entire like stretches of desert in New Mexico where there's nothing but ET games.
Didn't they actually find the burial site up for that?
They actually did. They thought it was an urban myth until they found it. But yeah, this like being on that first wave, we got to play a lot of stuff, and a lot of things have gone backwards. Like, we had the whole revolution when we were in high school, or middle school to high school, where everything was becoming full-on 3D, like Sonic, Mario, and stuff. And now some of the most popular versions of those games are the newer ones that are back to 2D, like New Super Mario Brothers, and then the Sonic handheld games, a couple like Sonic Advanced, and even Sonic Colors and Sonic Generation, which are 2D games, even though they feature 3D sprites, they were still back to being 2D games, which is really cool.
Yeah. See, now what I'm about to say is going to qualify as blasphemy, but I was always a big fan of the 2D Marios when they made a transition into 3D with Mario 64. I was not a fan of it. I actually hated how it played. It felt really clunky, really sluggish to me, and I know a lot of people say that that is arguably one of the best 3D platformer games to this day. And to me, it felt really rough.
I mean, it was also the first, so it was going to be really rough. Sadly, Mario had the displeasure of being the first one out. Like, they fixed it with Banjo-Kazooie. Games like Banjo-Kazooie and Crash Bandicoot and Gex were way more fluid. And even Spyro the Dragon, but It also had the displeasure of being the first one out the gate for the PlayStation side, because after that, Crash Bandicoot was better. Then they made the Jak and Daxter series later on, but it set a precedence for this is what fans want. Just like when Nintendo was ballsy enough to, when the DS came out, they said, "Hey, we're gonna make a new Mario," and everyone's like, "Yeah, it's gonna be like Mario Sunshine handheld." No, it's gonna be we're gonna reimagine Super Mario Brothers 1, but with 3D sprites, but it's gonna be a 2D game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge thing. And the other thing too is now, like I was getting into, there's a lot of ways you can actually play legally or illegally, but mostly I'm really excited about the legal ways you can actually get old consoles or variants of old consoles to play old games. And they're pretty inexpensive. Like if you have access to a Half-Price Books or some type of game exchange or something like that in your city, you might have seen what's called a Yobo FC Twin or one of the Segas that has like 80 games jammed into it. And because of the way that it designed and marketed, they're actually legal to sell. And if you have old games and your console doesn't work, you can go out and pick one of those up for like anywhere between 50 to 150 bucks, depending on which version you get. You can relive all that magic. Or there's also like some of the game companies anyway, have gone the way of making their entire backlog or back catalog of games available on their newer consoles, which is also pretty dope. But if you really have that taste for nostalgia, there's a bunch of weird, good ways you can do that now and not like break your bank, like trying to surf eBay and get lucky and find a game that you really want for less than 100 bucks.
Oh wow!
I
So now,
mean,
I remember seeing those arcade or those game consoles in the mall where it was like a console and a controller designed after like a Nintendo 64. But you would find like a bunch of old, like 80 or 100 old classic retro games on them. One of which I remember distinctively being Poppin' Twinbee, the Konami vertical shoot 'em up that was, and Konami had their fair share of them with Gradius and Parodius. So.
Gradius is amazing to this day.
And Poppin' Twinbee was always one of those games that, okay, this comes from, being a DDR kid way back when. The song Twinbee that was on DDR Extreme.
Twinbee was amazing.
Yeah. Do, 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 do,
Gratty Cyber. I hate songs.
Gratty.
I'm like, Gratty.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you can literally go somewhere, and if you get lucky, you can find one of those consoles. And maybe, like, I bought Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles the other day for $20 total to go on the Sega I got for Christmas, like one of the remake models or whatever. And because of the way the patent laws work, it's completely legal. And there's also this thing called the Retron series. There's a Retron 1 through 5. They put everything from Nintendo up to Super Nintendo, and including the Sega Genesis, in one console. And it makes ROMs so you have quick save availability within the system itself. Even if you're playing a game that doesn't normally save, you can quick save and then come back later. So, like, let's say you're playing Sonic 2, instead of having to go all the way back or use the classic 1965 917 code to skip ahead, you can just pop it in and keep going, which is really amazing. Really, really, really amazing if you're like a nerd like I am and you have a really short attention span and you just want to like hop back into Oil Ocean instead of like playing all the way through to that point, which, oh my god, makes me want to like punch myself every time.
Wow.
Every time. I hate
I mean, punch yourself, really? I don't know if
like
I
for real,
don't.
get to Oil Ocean, you really want to do that in one sitting twice
Oh,
in one day?
I used to. No, okay, if we're gonna talk Sonic 2, real talk, when I was like 7, 8 years old, I would invite my friends to my house and they could only stay for like a half hour at a time, which at the I didn't realize exactly how mind-boggling that was. But like I would practice trying to get, like the goal was to get to Oil Ocean Zone in Sonic 2.
Yeah.
Like that was the big goal. And like which is the seventh level you have, hold on, was it Emerald Hill Chemical Plant, Hidden Vine or something? I want to it's that weird Inca waterfall. It was the token
Yeah.
water stage. Then you
The
had
Casino Night Zone.
Casino, then you had Hilltop, then you had Mystic Caves, which was level 6. So yeah,
Oh my God,
oil.
this game is my faves, hands down.
Best multiplayer music in that game, most certainly.
Yeah. But yeah, like those doing that is a lot easier now because again, if you don't have the ability to pick up one of those, a lot of these consoles or the company's upset consoles have like backlogged all their games. So like if you have a PS4 or a PS3, you can play pretty much every game, not really every, but a lot of the games that they had before, like Spyro. I went out to find Spyro the Dragons. I really want to play it. I found it somewhere in a legitimately sealed like game case. They wanted $60 for it. I paid $30 for it when it was brand new, because PlayStation games cost $29.99 back in the day.
That was actually, and when you think about it, like, you have to understand, there's probably an era of gamers now where the
Yeah.
PlayStation generation, that's considered retro. Like,
That's
you
old.
realize that to a generation, that's going to be considered retro gaming.
To my nephew, the Xbox 360 when he's my age would be considered retro gaming. Think about that. He's almost 10.
I mean, it gets so shocking. Like, for us, like, more stuff like Mario, Vintage Mega Man,
Yeah.
the original Final Fantasy, that's nearing retro. For us, like, Pong is like big retro. But there's gonna be a generation and era of gamers where the stuff touching now, that's gonna be like, whoa, who play what kind of dinosaur played this? How did they play this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I was literally looking at the, 'cause like I don't even get why it got so much more complicated, 'cause like you only needed three to four buttons when you were younger. That's it.
I
And
mean,
you can
look at
play entire
Sonic. You
games.
look at Sonic the Hedgehog. You didn't even need three for that game. You needed a D-pad and one button, and that was it.
Literally, all three buttons jump, so no matter what you pressed on that controller, you were just going to jump
You were like
or
a
spin.
Destiny. You were like a Destiny's Child song. Everybody in the club is jumping, jumping.
All day. It's like, oh man, I'm gonna jump on that rock. I'm gonna jump on that TV.
And you know what? And I just made that. That is probably one of the better jokes I think I've made. That is, I
I
absolutely.
think it's one of the best jokes you've ever made in your entire life. You deserve
I finally did it. I finally did
you the real MVP, Jesse. You the real
it.
MVP.
After nearly 16 years of knowing each other, James, I finally did it. I made a funny. I'm like
You
Master
did.
Splinter over here.
Oh my god. But yeah, like if you really want to, there's a lot of cool avenues out there. Like you can pick up games like the other day I bought Metroid 2 on the game on the 3DS for $3, and it wasn't even on sale.
Was gonna say Metroid 2, Return of Samus. That was decidedly a Game Boy game, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, which confused me when I was younger, because I remember I played Metroid 1 on the Nintendo. And then like one of my friends was like, oh, I'm playing Metroid 2, and it was on like a Game Boy, and I was really confused. But back then Nintendo was like, if you wanted to follow the story, you played on whatever we put it out on. They still do that to a degree. But it is an amazing Game Boy game. I'll go that far. It pushed the limits of what a I want to say that technically it's only a 6-bit system because it doesn't have access to all the colors to make it true 8-bit. But it pushes the limits of the original Game Boy. But there's a lot of really good Nintendo games you can get if you have a 3DS or a new 3DS XL for all those out there looking to buy one. And it literally every few weeks they have stuff for sale, and on average you can pick up stuff from the 8-bit era of Nintendo, from the Game Boy to the regular Nintendo on the handheld to I want to say to all the way up to the GameCube on the Wii U. But just speaking about specific retro games, you can pick this up for like literally. I paid the most I've ever paid for a game was like $6. And I want to say it was Mario 3, but it was worth it. Totally
Oh
worth it.
my God, Mario 3. I remember first getting that game, like my dad and I must have rented that game like three or four times from a video store way back when those existed, when you didn't have stuff like Gamefly or, Redbox or
Steam.
whatever, or Steam for that matter, yeah.
Actually,
And we must have rented that like three or four times, and then finally my grandmother came down to visit, God bless her soul, and her God rest her soul in this case. And she came down with a copy of Super Mario Bros. 3 on the Nintendo, and my sister and I, we played the hell out of that game. Like, that is all we played for an entire summer, and it was a wonderful summer.
anytime I'd go over my aunt's house, that's all we would ever play was Mario 3, to the point that we got in trouble because we would fight over who was going to be first or second player, to the point that she hid it from us. I said
My God.
she lost it.
I was gonna say, no, that was some serious fights back in the day. Who wants to be Luigi? Who
No,
wants to be
unless you're playing
Peachy?
Mario 2, no, never.
Nah, only in Mario 2 is
Because he
Luigi
jumps
a
higher.
viable pick.
Higher and
Only.
further. Why wouldn't you want to play as him in Mario 2?
Yeah.
Him or Peach? Toad's okay, I guess. But for real, there's a lot of other ways, and if you want to look it up, the consoles are called the Yobo, which is just a Nintendo emulator, the Yobo FC Twin, which plays Nintendo and Super Nintendo games, and the Behemoth, the Retron 5, which plays Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Master System, and regular Sega Genesis games. That one costs you like $130, but again, it turns your games into legal ROMs when you put the cartridge in, which is amazing. So you have quick save access to games that don't have saves, and it has, believe it or not, there's six control ports, two per system on the console also. So just wrap your head around that, Jesse.
Oh God.
Then also, again, you have the Virtual Console for the Nintendo, the PSN network for the PlayStation, and Xbox Live for Xbox games, which kind of has some classic stuff, mainly from Sega, like Altered Beast, which is actually one of my favorite games, period.
Yeah.
And then Steam. Steam has some too. Actually, Steam has a lot more than I thought.
Actually, if we're going to talk about retro games in that case, then may I even go so far as to suggest good old games.com. GOG.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there. That's another
GOG.com.
besides. Oh my God, the fact that that's legal still blows my mind.
I mean, GOG.com is so wonderful. I myself love old PC games mostly because my computer is an archaic piece of hell. But no, I love most of those games. I could sit down and play 4X Alpha Centauri all day. Like as I mentioned in episode one, that is one of my favorite games. Even but I like some of the RPGs you can still get on there, like the Baldur's Gate series. I was also a big fan of
You ever
Deus
play that?
Ex, the
You ever play
original
Zork?
Deus Ex.
You ever play Zork?
No, I did not play Zork.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I also want to, like, if I were going to sit down and play, like, a classic PC RPG, we're talking, like, Betrayal at Krondor. I used to have Betrayal at Antara on my PC, but that was
You know what I just
years.
realized too? You know what else counts as retro games now?
What's that?
Diablo 2, the Warcraft series, the original StarCraft. All that stuff is retro games now. All of it.
Actually, you know, that does beg a big question. What constitutes a retro game? What is
Actually, you're right. I would
retro by
say,
definition?
well, again, it changes by generation, but since the majority of the people that are gamers are our age, I would say between 89 to 95, you can consider retro games. This has been a full generation, it's been a full 10 years since the newest of them to come out.
I mean, I was gonna say, I guess if we want to consider that the what we grew up with was the Nintendo era, you know, I mean that was our start. So yeah, I guess you could see that as retro.
Yeah, bro, from about 89, from 85, let's say, all the way up to, like I say, 95. Because actually, like, there are some huge leaps in graphics and overall design in games, too, from then to then. Within that time frame, they had actually started to develop the 3D engines that became the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn. Let's not forget that. That was another huge shift.
Oh yeah, the jump from 16 to 32-bit era. I would venture to say that that was actually one of the biggest jumps in gaming, technologically, that we've ever seen. I mean, you going from, say, Nintendo to Super Nintendo with the Mode 7 graphics and whatnot,
Yeah.
that had some cool effects to it, but I would have to say the jump from 16 to 32-bit, that
Yeah.
was.
I mean, arguably this last one, like between the let's say between the 64 and the PlayStation and all the stuff, it was kind of PlayStation 2 was kind of a bigger jump. It was about the same, but then like this last one was so minimal, it's like, why would I even buy one of these? At
Yeah.
least in my point of view. That's the only reason why I haven't bought one. It's like, well, the graphics are like literally 25% better. Usually it's like double. This time it's like, you can see more blood and more sweat if you're playing like a sports game. Like when you play NBA like 2K15, you can see every bead of sweat, and they almost look like real people. What about anything else? Oh, that's as far as we got, bruh. Bruh. Bruh.
I mean,
Next.
actually, funny story behind that, by the way, before we move on a bit. Do you remember the sports game Joe Montana's Pro Talk Football on the Genesis?
I have that still.
I want to say between that, or actually even Sonic the Hedgehog, the Sega that they vocalize at the beginning of the game, where it's like, Sega, if I'm not mistaken,
Takes
that
away
made.
two-thirds of the cartridge space.
I want to say it was
It's
like
something
an eighth.
ridiculous.
It was a huge amount of the actual cartridge space. I can't remember how
Maybe
much,
it's
but
like one-third. It's something that you wouldn't think, but it's because it's a real vocal and it's not like a digitized one, so it takes up a lot of space.
yeah.
Which is crazy. Which also makes me think, how limited was the Sega cartridge? That's another conversation for another day, though. We should just do an episode about Sega and an episode about Nintendo.
That would be a good one. But with that being said, because we have gone way off track, I would say we've gone way over. I mean, if you're gonna go over, there are worse things you could go over talking
That means
about.
you gotta cut your segments in half for both of
Yeah.
them. Sorry, my bad.
You jerk. You're the worst. But if I'm
Then that's
about,
Jesse's time.
yeah, it's been a great evening.
Sounds good.
Actually, no, one thing I am gonna, or one of the few things I will talk about, well, not really one of the few, that was a horrible lie. I lied horribly to the viewer base at large. Hotline Miami 2, transitioning off the talk of retro games to a modern game with a decidedly retro look and feel.
That's so be retro then?
Faux retro? Neo retro?
Fotro. That's the
Fotro.
Fotro. I'm copyrighting that shit. Fotro.
Get on it. So, for those of you who have never played Hotline Miami 2, wrong number, and are looking to buy it, first off, I would suggest playing the original Hotline Miami 1. Hotline Miami 1 was a very ultra-violent, I guess ultra-violent would be a way to call it. You played a character named Jacket who would have someone call him on the phone and give him a mission that equates to, it's like, hey, go to this building and show everyone a good time, or, give these people a real party. And what that really equated to was go in that building and murder every motherfucker in the room. But the game had a very surreal appearance. It was, the story was never quite what it seemed. It may have even been one of those cases where the story might have been, we made more out of it than what there really was.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the game mechanics were very on point. They were very tight controls. It was a challenging game. You were going to die a lot, but it never felt like you were dying because of bullshit. You could prevent a lot of the ways you were dying. You
Yeah.
could. The game was tough but fair. And in particular, Hotline Miami 1 had an amazing soundtrack. Had one of the best video game soundtracks I have ever heard. And I am a sucker for a good soundtrack, as we all should know. Hotline Miami 2, in this regard, does not disappoint. The soundtrack is a lot of the same new, like Electronica with like a slight hint of new wave feel to it. But I would say it's a lot harder this time around. It has a definite ed a lot edgier, a lot angrier in some of the tracks this time around. Also, they have gone out of their way to give it more of a story, like that focuses on a multitude of characters, each with their own agendas, their own mindsets, their own motivations for doing what they're doing. And that some of that stuff, you find out that it does not end well for a lot of people.
I think I heard this before.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like it, doesn't it? I
Yeah,
can't
it's like weird
imagine why.
deja vu, huh?
Yeah, it's like Black Cat. Oh, there's another Black Cat. Oh, geez, check the Matrix. I did like a lot of the new characters they've introduced for Hotline Miami 2. In particular, I was very fond of the character Evan, who is actually designed to take a non-violent approach to what he does. Which gameplay mechanics, there's really no change to how you would play. The only real change is that any firearm you're given with him, he disarms immediately. He mainly maims people with melee weapons, and if you hit them once, they just fall and start rolling over like they're in pain, as they're incapacitated. You can choose to attack them even further, and if you beat them to death, and this happens twice, you enter a rage mode where he can start killing people and using guns, but you actually do not gain as many points within the game by doing it like this. In fact, the basic premise with Evan is that you want to take this non-violent approach. And again, it's a nice visual touch, as opposed to, there was no real mechanic change. They just did a nice visual change out to it, which was great. The fans are the characters known as the fans. They're the ones that utilize the masks from the original Hotline Miami, and each character has their own specific skill sets. There's also a couple of prequel characters that are introduced in a prequel or past sense relating to the original Hotline Miami, and their missions play out in similar ways. The one thing I would say that I was not a big fan of with this game, and after I've had some time to think on it after playing it for the past couple days, number one, there's a certain set of levels that take place in Hawaii, and the Hawaii levels have a more wide open feel to them than the normal building fare of the standard Hotline Miami maps. Hotline Miami as a game does not feel like it is designed for a wide open mapped area. It doesn't feel like it plays meant for it. I almost feel like Hotline Miami benefits from having kind of a claustrophobic map setting, and in a wide open setting, it just feels like it's a lot more unfair than it should be. Like it's not
So,
uncommon to get killed by something off screen that you just didn't see or couldn't see.
sounds like Zelda. Like for the first one, because like how everything scrolled, every now and then you could like run slightly off. There'd be like something slightly off screen, like the Octoroks. They would still shoot crap at you.
Yes. Another thing that I would say with Hotline Miami 2, and it kills me to say this, it is glitchy. It was not uncommon for enemies to get trapped in corners and just start spinning around.
Yeah.
there were certain levels where you could actually exploit the fans. One of the two of the characters, actually, you control a set of twins. One uses a chainsaw, one uses a gun, and you control the one with the chainsaw. It was actually not uncommon to be able to kill boss enemies through walls using the
Yeah.
chainsaw character, which was an and it would just teleport you into the next room, and the other enemy would glitch out. It was a very bad exploit that I noticed, and I wasn't very happy about that. There were a couple of levels where if you entered a room, you would or if you entered a doorway, you could not leave. You were stuck in there. And or if you tried to shoot through said door, it would not let you, as though it was like there was an invisible wall there, and that was really grating. That actually I felt like it made the game unnecessarily harder than it needed to be. And if it was a full-blown glitch, then I'm very disappointed, because the original Hotline Miami, grants you, had been out for at least 2 or 3 years now up to this point,
Yeah.
but it didn't feel like it had those issues.
To be fair, they probably had a longer development cycle for the first game. And after you make your first one that's good, you have to pump out the sequel pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
Plus, sadly, it's like two of them working on it, so.
I mean, that is true. Denaton Games, the studio behind Hotline Miami, is really a development studio of two guys. Two guys who have actually created in all fairness, a really good game.
How did I know that already?
Anyway, it has the game itself has the same surreal feel, the same kind of just uneasy environments. Just the atmosphere is just cringy, kind of dirty, morally destitute, most certainly.
I like Moral Destitution, not gonna lie.
If you liked the first Hotline Miami, you'll definitely like the second. I recommend it. If the first one wasn't your flavor, this one isn't going to do much to change your mind.
I'm actually willing to just play the second one because normally when I play the first game and then go back and play the second, I actually have the. You know, like people complain about when you play the games in order, the second one isn't as good, or when you play them out of order, you just like completely shit on one or the other.
Yeah.
I would much rather just play it as a standalone game. Like, how much of it does it tie back into it?
It actually ties in quite a bit. It is definitely the kind of game where you want to play. I feel like if you want to fully appreciate it, you should probably play the first, because the second one does touch on a lot of the events of the first. There's certainly a certain character mythos that I feel would be left unappreciated if you didn't play the first one.
Okay, but now that you said that, I'm not gonna play it at all. If, out of spite, I'm
You
not gonna play it.
bastard. You are
Yeah.
the worst. You are the worstest.
The worst is so bad you have to use a proper grammar.
Yeah, I can't even use proper grammar.
Yeah, I might
You're
play
like
it eventually.
a friend of mine who I call the worstest, because in Final Fantasy 14, she plays a Lalafell, and she constantly preens about how great her Lalafell is. And I think she's the worstest.
Knock her down a peg.
Well, by the way, great non sequitur on my end. I want to say that's a non sequitur. I could be wrong. It's probably not a non sequitur. I probably just used
Best
non
or
sequitur incorrectly.
bestest non sequitur. Oh yeah, you did. Wow, you're dumb. So that was
Yeah.
the worstest. You're right. That was horrible.
And it all comes full circle.
Yeah.
But speaking of Lalafells, I also did want to get into Final Fantasy 14. Now for the player base here, or for the viewer base, excuse me. I'm an avid player of Final Fantasy 14. I first picked it up on the PS3 when they did the Realm Reborn release, or re-release rather, and I have since upgraded to PS4, and I've been playing it since. And at the PAX East Fan Expo, they announced, or they hadn't announced it, but they finally announced the release date for Final Fantasy 14's big expansion, Heavensward.
Woot woot.
Yep, June 23rd. If you pre-order the game on March 16th, you'll get early access into the game, which it starts on June 19th. And I have to tell you, James, I am excited for. Like,
Is it gonna be worth it, though? Is like the main
that's what I
question.
think it is. And I dare I say, I think this is going to be. I think this is one of the we everyone talks about there being an MMO to be a WoW killer, and I think everyone needs to stop trying to look at MMOs like that. Like, what's going to come around and kill WoW? Rather, you want to look at MMOs, what MMO is going to carve its next big niche? And I think Final Fantasy 14 is onto something here. for starters, let's get into actually what Heavensward is going to consist of. Number one, the entire game is going to focus on the human dragon war that takes place in the Ishgard region, and you're finally going to get to explore that area in full. The level caps being raised from 50 to 60, three new job classes are being introduced, and they are introducing flying mounts to be able to cover the region as well. Now, if some of this sounds a little familiar to you, like you've heard it before, then you know I can tell you what MMO that reminds me of and what expansion specifically.
Star Wars, right? It's Star Wars.
Go fuck yourself. What I'm talking about is World of Warcraft and the Burning Crusade expansion.
Yeah.
The expansion that that in some people's opinions made WoW the mainstay game that it is today.
But to be fair, if you're going to pick anything to copy off of, you might as well pick the best one.
Well, here's the funny thing. For those of you who are do not understand or who aren't aware of Final Fantasy XIV's history, the game did not was it felt like an even worse version of 11. Apparently, when it came out, it was not a good game. It took about 13, 14. It took quite a few patches before the game became playable, in a lot of people's opinions. Admittedly, this is full disclosure. I did not play 14 at launch. So, just get that out of the way.
So bad.
One of the producers that they put behind the game to try and fix it, a producer by the name of Yoshi-P, I want to say Naoki Yoshida, I want to believe say that his name is, actually. Thank you, Wikipedia. This is why this exists.
I'm glad you pronounced that a little bit better.
Yeah. Yep. Naoki Yoshida, a.k.a. Mr. Yoshi-P. Yoshi-P's first big... this was actually his first big production job. Like, he's worked in other games before, but this is the first time that he's been a producer and director where it's been really his input in the game. They put him in charge of rebuilding and fixing Final Fantasy XIV because he actually had experience in playing MMOs. He understood how MMOs worked. He understood how they're supposed to feel. He had that knowledge of how a game like this is supposed to play.
Yeah.
And the first thing that they did, apparently, was that they stopped trying to recreate the wheel. The wheel for MMOs these days has been done.
To death.
The wheel has been set. It's been designed. The shape has been built.
Yeah.
What you're trying to do is enhance the experience. Make the wheel roll better. Make the wheel yours.
Yeah. Build something the wheel rolls on, actually, is like what they really need to do.
And I feel like that is something that they have done with Final Fantasy XIV in spades.
Yeah.
Everything about 14, it's a fast, fluid game. It plays very well on console, which is unheard of, by the way. No one really tries to tap the console market, but they've done it with 14, and it plays remarkably.
They really need to step up that end of the development. I would play it if I could.
More importantly than that, 14 feels like a Final Fantasy game. This is one of those weird things to explain. Immersion. When you play something and it just feels right. And that's how I feel with 14. It feels like I have played a Final Fantasy game. It feels like it's all the good things about Final Fantasy that I've loved rolled into an MMO experience.
Yeah. That is what it needs to be.
And when I look at this expansion and what they're doing with it, the reason that I made the comparison to Burning Crusade is a lot of what they're doing really does resemble Burning Crusade in a lot of ways. You know, you do the level cap being raised, the flying mounts, a bigger, larger new area being introduced. You know, with World of Warcraft, you had Outlands.
Yeah.
That is right. You're the big WoW guy, so...
You know, it just confused me. I was thinking of, when you said that, you know what popped in my head?
What's that?
Not gonna lie, Mortal Kombat. That's not called Outlands.
Outworld.
Yeah, I was like, wait, yeah, Outlands, you're right, yeah.
Yep. But you had the Flying Mounts introduction that were only usable within the Outlands, and in the Ishgard region, that's gonna be the place where Flying Mounts are useful. Right now, if people don't know this, Final Fantasy XIV has 4 million subscribers. It is a pay-to-play game with 4 million subscribers. Their player base has gone progressively up.
As it should.
That's unheard of in the current MMO climate. Unless you're World of Warcraft, that that's difficult to do.
I don't say impossible, but from the way people make it look lately, it's like, oh man, I'm playing a game. What game are you playing? Wow. I thought you were playing WildStar. What?
What's WildStar?
What's WildStar?
And I mean, here's a full disclosure. I used to be my first honest to God foray into modern MMORPGs as we know it was actually Star Wars: The Old Republic. And I met many wonderful people on that. I will defend that to this day.
Yeah.
I played that game for nearly 2 years. They were so slow to get out content updates, and when they did, the content wasn't always that great. The f leveling from 1 to 50 was phenomenal, but that was it. The end game was terrible. In
That's what kills games.
less than a year, SWTOR went free play. And or went free to play with microtransactions, and it was never quite the same game. Like something just bottomed out.
I mean, slow content almost killed WoW and Cataclysm. I mean, it's gone, man.
I don't think you're ever going to quite kill WoW. That game's always going to have millions of people playing it. However, 14, not counting their expansion that releases this June, about every 3 to 4 months, maybe even earlier than that, there's always a new content expansion that, or a new content that's patched in, new side story stuff, new main story, new little things that you can do. Just recently, their most recent patch, the 2.51 patch, introduced the gold saucer, the same gold saucer from Final Fantasy VII that everyone gushed about is in Final Fantasy XIV. You know what you can pl you can chocobo race in the gold saucer. You know what else you can do with this new gold saucer patch? You can
What,
play
bro?
Triple Triad from Final Fantasy VIII, the card game.
Nah, that's too much. You lost me. You lost me.
Oh, you can't hate on Triple Triad. No one can hate on Triple Triad. Triple Triad
Oh.
is too good to hate on.
Challenge accept. I
But
mean,
they implemented one of the best mini games in Final Fantasy history into 14, and they're making it work. They have been extremely consistent with content for this player base.
that's what it really needs to be, is you have to pump out content to people that want to play it. Again, like that's what seems like it's killed pretty much every MMO. And again, it almost happened to Blizzard because they were so almost overconfident with how they were releasing content for one expansion.
And now, I'm not going to say Final Fantasy XIV has gotten everything they've touched right. For
Yeah.
example, when they introduced the Wolves' Den, which was their idea of 4-on-4 arena PvP, it was not great. It was not balanced at all. And admittedly, I was turned off from PvP at that point. However, since then, they've also introduced their Frontlines, which is a three-way faction fight between the three grand companies of
Yeah.
the game. And I want to say that it takes place on a more massive level. You actually can equip mounts while you're in the area, and you're fighting in this area called the Cartno Flats.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a giant battlefield.
That sounds pretty fun.
That was their way of trying to fix it, and I think they've gone out of their way. If you played Final Fantasy XIV when it first released on PC many years back, and you were turned off from it, and you heard about the release of A Realm Reborn, and you weren't quite sold, here's me telling you now: this is your time to jump in. New expansion is a few months away, at the big content expansion. I think that if this content expansion is as good as I think it's going to be, I think we may have finally found our competitor for WoW. Final Fantasy is on the brink of releasing its version of a Burning Crusade, and I think they've got something here.
They might. Hopefully
Well, I hope so too, because I've really invested into this MMO and I'm
they
really sold on it, so I hope it does keep up with itself.
mean, like, believe it or not, like, competition is what makes better everything because it forces other companies to try to outdo something else.
Well, I mean,
Oh.
that's a big thing, especially with World of Warcraft. They haven't had to compete.
Not since it killed EverQuest 2.
EverQuest 2 was going to compete with it.
I mean, think of it this way, like,
Actually, if you really want me to tell you what Final Fantasy 14 does right, I will go back to the WoW example. When World of Warcraft came out, in my opinion, and this when I first played it, it was vanilla. World of Warcraft, to me, didn't feel like it did anything that original. Didn't feel like they did anything crazy to reinvent the wheel. Or they didn't try to reinvent the wheel. What they did is what Blizzard damn near does with every game they touch. They take an established genre, they build on it, and they fine-tune it to perfection.
Yeah.
They don't go... I can't say that they haven't done creative things. But World of Warcraft took the best of what was going on with every MMO at that time, and they fine-tuned it to perfection, and they continued to do so. And that's been Blizzard's mantra for years. We're going to delay it until it's perfect. With MMOs, you can't do that as well. But they've done about as well with it as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Final
four.
With 14, I feel like they've done the same thing. They didn't try to create a game that was completely and wholly new that no one had ever played before, no one had ever seen before. They didn't try to create a whole new MMO. What they did is they took things that worked, stuff that was sound, stuff that was balanced, stuff that had been time-tested and tried and true, and they applied it, and they applied it perfectly, and they put their Final Fantasy coat and shine on it, and it shows, and it works.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's all you can really hope for.
I mean, sometimes that... I think they're onto something here. I really do, and I think Heaven's Sword is going to be the deciding point. I truly feel this way. Things I will tell you that I am looking forward to in Heaven's Sword, it's not even just the new Ishgard area. The flying mounts are nice. One of the things that I'm looking forward to is the new raid dungeon that they're implementing, where you literally fight the primal slash summon Alexander, and you break into him, and you fight his inner machinations. Alexander, for those of you who are not Final Fantasy equipped, if you will, Alexander is a summon that resembles a big knight slash robot.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're making him the new big... They're making literally him the big dungeon itself. I feel like it's going to be like Shadows of the Colossus in a way.
Where you have to fight your way up. Actually, that's what they did with Sin too, kind of. You fought him, and then you had to fight inside of him.
Oh man, that wouldn't be bad at all. I think that'd be really cool. But nonetheless... I implore you in the game, if you haven't already tried Final Fantasy 14 and you hear this, give it a shot. There's like a 14-day free trial. Give it a whack. If you find out that you're enjoying it, stick around. Give it a whack,
I actually was going to make a Gator Golf reference. I didn't even think about the other thing you said till now.
Yeah. And for the record, if you want to say hi to me, I have a character. We'll get to that later at the end of the show where you can find us. The last thing that I think I personally wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
The Evolution Fighting Game Championships in Las Vegas this year. And a couple things about that I'm really looking forward to and perhaps may even want to touch on. First off, fighting games are really starting to break into the high end of competitive gaming. At the past Capcom Cup that they just had, they announced that various fighting game tournaments that were, you know, considered premier events by the Capcom Cup would be given a large cash prize courtesy of Capcom. And it was a combined total pool of $500,000, excuse me, $500,000 with a certain dividend of money to be divided among premier events where people could qualify into the Capcom Cup. Evo itself is actually being considered the premier event. It's getting a huge chunk of that money. I want to say $50,000 that's divided up between first through eighth place, and the winner of that gets an automatic seed into the Capcom Cup. The Capcom Cup itself, of the remaining prize pool, is having $250,000 divided up between first through eighth place, with first obviously getting, I think, half of that at $125,000.
That's beyond dumb.
That's big money.
That's crazy money.
That's the kind of money that makes people pick up a controller, pick up a stick, and start learning Street Fighter. That's the kind of money that makes people learn Hadoukens.
I mean, to be fair, if you can't do Hadouken, it should be in the tournament anyway.
Yeah, but I mean that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
And the big thing that I'm actually reveling in right now, and I'm like, woo, it worked out for me, I guess. Street Fighter 4 this year, Ultra Street Fighter 4 rather, has been moved to the PlayStation 4 console. For several years, they ran Street Fighter 4 and its iterations on the PS3. Then they converted to Xbox 360 after there was discovered that there were lag issues within the PS3 console that were affecting gameplay.
Yep.
This pa or within the past few months, or Sony threw Capcom a lot of money and bought the console exclusivity of Street Fighter V. And on top of that, games such as Ultra Street Fighter IV are now on PS4. So I think Sony has certainly become one of the competitive standards. If you keep in mind as well that anime fighters such as the Arc Systems Works fighters, Guilty Gear Xrd, that's a PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4 exclusive.
Yeah.
You won't find that on Microsoft's Xbox. Microsoft, I think, has an exclusive hold on Killer Instinct. Killer Instinct, although admittedly, has a very niche following within the fighting game community.
They really do.
Yeah. But then there's one game that has made such waves that to not acknowledge it, I feel, would be really unfair, and that's
That game.
Nintendo Smash Brothers.
Fuck that game.
You know, I used to say that. I really did. I really did, and I kind of feel dirty for where I'm about to go in, but both Smash Brothers games, if I'm not mistaken right now, Smash Brothers Melee, I think, has the second highest entrance or entrant pool at Evo, right behind Street Fighter 4 right now. And Smash 4 for Wii U, I think, just broke over 1,000 entrants. In particular, Melee at Evo is set to be the biggest Smash tournament ever. It's looking to dwarf any Smash tournament that's happened this past year by comparison.
Like, I don't see, like, to be fair, like I've pointed out a dozen times, a lot of people used to, is like, it's not stock like a tournament friendly game, because you have to ban outright like stages or characters. But to be fair, the new one does have where it's permanently in tournament mode. You're always on Final Destination, to be fair.
Or a level that can resemble it.
Yeah.
Again, I used to feel the same way about Melee. I used to be very heavily slanted towards that, and I'm kind of, I like I said,
I remember.
Melee's not my game, but I'm starting to warm up to it. There's a certain level of charm that the game does have, and I think part of its appeal is that it does play so unlike any other fighting game. Whereas every other fighting game, you have a very static life bar on a very flat stage of that's left to right. You know, Melee, you could have, for those who have played Smash Brothers, the life bar isn't a traditional life bar in a sense. The objective of the game is you're trying to knock your character off the stage, and as you take damage, you have a percentage bar, or a percentage bar that goes up. The higher the percentage, the easier it is to knock you off the stage. Each character in traditional tournament rule sets gets 4 lives or 4 stocks, and you lose. Or you win or you lose once you run your opponent out of those 4 stocks. So, Smash has a very different play style compared to everything else. It is also a level with, or it's also a game which has characters that can be very. The levels actually do have an effect on play. Certain characters are affected by certain levels differently than others. Some. To such a degree that it has led to stages being banned because it can give characters a very unfair advantage.
Stupid ice climbers ruining shit for everybody.
Oh, I don't know if the ice climbers have ruined anything.
I mean, they're part of the reason why, actually, this is one of the reasons why they're not in the new game, to be totally honest.
No, I don't know about that. I mean, I would have liked to have seen the ice climbers in Smash 4. I'm not personally, I the closest character that I've seen to it, and that this is my largely uneducated opinion. I thought Rosalina and Luma would have been the counter to, or would have been the new ice climbers, but I would have thought that looking at it going in, how you kind of have a weird control between Rosalina and the star Luma. Now, whether that's the case, I don't know. Again, I'm not a competitive Smash player. My knowledge of Smash.
Spoiler alert. Rosalina is Luigi and Peach's baby.
What is up? God. Anyway.
Just saying, bro. Just saying, it's true.
Anyway, wow.
She is? Peach is dead in the future.
I have to be honest. I'm personally going to Evo in Las Vegas. I'm going to be witnessing all this live, and I'm going to want to do a live at Evo cast when I have a chance. But I never thought I'd hear myself say this, yet here I am. I'm actually looking forward to the Smash Brothers Melee tournament. You
Blasphemy.
got a lot of strong competitors in that field. You have the five gods of Smash as is. Mewtwo King, Armada, Mango, who is the current two-time defending Evo champion. You have Evil Genius's PPMD, aka Dr. PP, who is
Dr. PP.
that's his name, Dr. PP, who is
Sounds like some weird
a
shit.
who is the current, I think, reigning two-time Apex champion, Apex being the big premier Smash Brothers tournament.
Yeah.
You have Hungrybox, who has, with his Jigglypuff gameplay, done some absolutely crazy stuff.
Jigglypuff's actually amazing, believe it
Yeah.
or not.
And keep in mind, Mango was the one who revolutionized Jigglypuff gameplay, and yet Hungrybox has, made it his own. One player that I'm actually kind of interested in seeing is a player who's kind of looked at as the heel, the villain of the Smash Brothers community, and he just recently got signed to Team Solo Mid, Leffen, out of
Yeah.
Sweden. And he just recently, I think, as of Apex, has claimed the distinction of beating all five of the Smash gods in tournament competition.
We'll see. I mean, you might be able to do it.
This might, I think this could be Leffen's breakout event. If there was ever an event for him to break out and secure his place among the,
Elite.
elite to actually be to up to become one of the gods, to make it the six gods of Smash, I think Evo's it. I think an amazing showing here. I think nothing a good sh a great showing, a top eight showing would be monumental for him, but I think winning Evo, that would put him at godhood, and I think that would make him the best Smash player
You
running
know, if
right
I
now.
was there and I was gambling on it, I would actually put money on him to place to either win place or show. Like for I'd put him in the top three, believe it or not.
I mean, he's got wins over Mango in competition. He's got wins over Mewtwo King. I think he's got a way of getting in your head. I mean,
He's a shit talker. That's what
he is
he's
a
supposed to do.
he is a shit talker. He talks amazing shit, but that's also the kind of player that makes people play hard.
Yeah. No, there's nothing like competition to make you play hard. Like I've talked to you before, like that was the thing that really got me into playing WoW or any game I've ever played better on the competitive scene is playing with and against people who are better than I am. It made me actually take a step back and look at, maybe I should have did this. Maybe I should have did that.
I mean, it's not just them being better than you, but the fact that they are not afraid to tell you that they're better than you are. The
Yeah.
fact that they're willing to shit talk you. They're willing to make you hate them because you won't train as hard to beat someone that you like or impartial to. What does it matter? But if you have someone you want to knock off because they agitate you that much, they make you just want to get up. It's like even when you don't want to play, you're like, I really don't want to play this game, but God, do I hate that motherfucker.
Yeah, spite is an amazing motivator, believe it or not. I think Hamlet got it right. Or not Hamlet. Dear God, Shakespeare had that right. Well, let's talk about something else real quick about that. We talked about this a couple of times too, is like the main reason why I never liked Smash, I guess I didn't word it properly, is like it's so simplistic that when you look at it at just itself, which is also one of the things that bring talking about Blizzard again, that makes their games and competitive nature so amazing once you get to true competitive levels, it's like it's so simplistic. Like when you think about it, technically Smash is like the most simplistic fighting game ever. You have an up B, a down B, a back B, you have a final smash, and that's pretty much it.
I
You
mean,
don't have to,
not even, well, Final Smash was most recently introduced,
but
and I
you know what
mean,
I mean. It's
yeah.
like it's
Oh, yeah.
really simplistic. You don't have to remember a quarter circle turn, quarter circle back, fierce punch, hard punch to do like a super move or anything like that. It's just solely just straight up inputs that are completely natural, just you moving back and forth across the screen
Oh, yeah.
and you can pull up a special.
And it's an incredibly fast-paced game. I mean, even some of the slowest versions of Smash still play a lot faster than than the normal fighting game fare that we see now. I mean, look, I love Street Fighter. I think Street Fighter is amazing. That's my favorite fighting game franchise of all time. That is one of my favorite fight or one of my favorite games, period. But there are a lot of fighting games that, built their, approach and their delivery and everything that they do off of Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Smash is so much different than that.
Smash was on Power Stone. There, I said it. I said it. I fucking said it.
Smash is its own beast entirely, and I think that's part of the appeal to it, is it really is so unlike any other fighting game.
And like some of the other things you mentioned, like due to the hazards on a level, you can take a low tier character, technically, like the Ice Climbers, and because they have certain advantages on the stages, they become a top tier
Well, it's not.
character.
Oh, it's not even the stages. Ice
Well, you know what I
climbers.
mean? Even like if you're, my bad, I'll let you go and I'll go.
Ice climbers themselves were a very. They were a very unique character set that, had, their own weird difficulty curve. Their true strength was when they found an ability in Melee called Wobbling, named after the ice climbers player Wobbles.
Yeah.
And Wobbling required you to desync Popo and Nana. And desyncing them, by the way, means I think everything that Popo does, any command you input as Popo Nana will do a 6 frames later.
Yeah.
So it has kind of like an echo effect. Desyncing them is, breaking the echo so that you're doing like a very weird loop chain on the characters.
Yeah.
The concept behind wobbling and that makes Popo and Nana, the ice climbers, so dangerous, is you can do basically what equates to a throw infinite with them, where you do just this chain grab that constantly applies damage, and you can take someone from 0 to 100 and just knock them out of the stage.
So you go 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah, that's one of the appeals to him, and I think that's one of the additional appeals of Smash.
I
It's
wasted that joke.
it's not uncommon in Smash Brothers. You could be at a full stock, 0% damage taken, and someone who is on their last stock and has taken 100% damage already, and that person can beat you just by playing more. They don't even have. They can do minimal damage. They can maybe take 50% of your life, but they can proceed to just beat you tactically. They can use the stage against you, and that's a big deal.
And the thing I was saying is like the certain levels of ice climbers, because of the way they work, you can get thrown off the edge. You can pretty much just juggle yourself on and off the edge and trap people and throw them off the edge just because of the way the ice climbers worked with like their edge detection. Like you can get close enough where you can grab yourself, pull yourself back up, throw somebody off, pull yourself back up, throw somebody off till they're just dead. You can use it that way too, which is dumb, but sadly they're not there anymore.
All right.
Mega Man game.
Yep. Anything else you would like to talk about, James?
No, I was just gonna mention like one more thing about competitive play, but I think I'll save that for another episode.
Episode 4, A New
Episode
Hope.
A New Hope. Yes, episode 4 is gonna be about something similar to that. Actually, it might be about something else. Who knows? Maybe if we're lucky, by episode 10, if enough people listen, we can actually stream. And that'd be dope to do like a stream episode.
Yep. Well, ladies and gentlemen, with that, then I believe our podcast has come to an end. If you'd like to follow James and I across, different social media platforms, you can find myself on twitch.tv or Twitter under the name Jesse Uno, J-E, capital JESSE, capital UNO. James, if these lovely, lovely people want to find you.
Twitter at Young Jameis. It's pretty self-explanatory, I
How do you
guess.
see how
JAIMUS.
Yes. And eventually we're going to get that joint Twitch TV channel off on hand, the Team Rocket Twitch channel. Eventually we will get to that and we'll start streaming games for you all.
I want to say weekly. We can do like a weekly stream. That'd
Yeah.
be legit. It's kind of fun.
Monthly. Let's not get too ambitious yet, but we can
I can
try
do
it.
weekly. I can do weekly. Well, let me rephrase that. One of us, mainly me, I guess, will try to put something up maybe once a week if you're lucky, because I like streaming anyway. Why not? And then, like, jointly guaranteed once a month, we'll do one. And if we really get into it, we'll let you pick the game we play if we have it. That'd be amazing. And horrifying at the same time.
It'll be ballsy, we'll do that.
Let's play
But,
Kirby's Dream Land.
oh God. But beyond that, I believe that is about it. Our apologies, we'll get episode 2 up eventually.
We already have that up. You're stupid.
No. Episode 2 is not up. Eventually we'll get it there though. We're going to make episode 2 happen.
So
But
episode 10 will be the episode 2 special.
but nonetheless, our apologies. Episode 2 is on the way. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Jesse. This is James. We are the Team Rocket Podcast, and we are blasting off. We'll see y'all again.
Deuces.